Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, apart from his always dubious attempt at an Irish accent, how authentic was Pierce Brosnan's depiction of the boxing trainer Brendan Ingle in the film Giant? Sean Ingle is his great-nephew and now, perhaps unsurprisingly, chief sports writer for The Guardian. Afternoon, Sean.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Was there at any point when you were watching the film that you forgot it was Pierce Brosnan and you thought, oh my God, it's Brendan?
There were indeed. There were some phrases that Brendan would say all the time because he was a boxing trainer, but he was also a bit of a priest, a philosopher, a sort of student of life. And he would say things like, you know, boxing is a nasty, vindictive, prostituting business. And that line is said in the film. And I remember him saying exactly the same thing to me when I first stepped into that gym more than 30 years ago.
Yeah. And as I understand it, as depicted in the film, the taste of music wasn't quite accurate.
Yeah, so the film starts with it being 1981, and it was the St. Thomas Boys and Girls Club in Sheffield, and they would throw discos, but of course, 1981, you have the sort of synth pop music coming in, and it starts with a few, you know, whatever it is, Ultravox or whatever, and Brendan was very much a sort of Frank Sinatra and the sort of the swingers rather than the new age rockers and revelers and ravers.
Yeah, and so, but when you were a young fella, you did get to go down to the gym and watch him train with Naz.
My grandfather was Jimmy Ingle. He was the first Irishman to win a European amateur title in 1939, and Brendan was one of his younger brothers. So there was always a connection. But I went as a student in the mid 90s up to Sheffield, and I would pop in every couple of weeks or so to the gym.
Yeah, and when you first saw Nazim, what stage was he at? You know, was this only the beginning of their relationship?
Nazim showed up at the gym age 7. So they'd already been together at this point 13, 14 years. And Nazim had just won the European Championship. So people were talking about him. He'd already established himself as a brilliant boxer, but also a controversial one because he'd beaten a European champion called Vincenzo Belcastro. But he won so easily, he started sort of showboating and being cocky and almost belittling Belcastro. And that didn't go down particularly well. So he wasn't the world champion yet, but he was on the verge of something really, really special.
And did Brendan encourage that showboating to a certain extent? He understood the showman part of boxing.
Completely. I think there was a bit of that. For Naz's first fight, which I think was in Rotherham, he was a complete unknown really outside boxing. Brendan was driving him around with a loudspeaker, telling everyone that morning, come and see this guy who's going to be the greatest thing since Muhammad Ali. So he did have that showman mentality. There was that sense of he felt he could always perhaps control it, at least in the early stages, the arrogance and the showmanship. But as Naz got better, it did start to spiral out of control.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. That philosopher part of him, because it seems, and it's depicted in the film, plus things people have written about the real Brendan, that it wasn't just about boxing. It was to help people make their way in the world and bring all, as you said, that all that elements of being a philosopher and a priest.
Completely. I mean, I went there because I was a sports nut and I cared a lot about boxing. I come from a boxing family. But actually, the thing I got most out of it were the number of kids that had been expelled from school, that social services couldn't deal with. They would show up at 14, 15, and there was something about boxing, something about Brendan that sort of tapped into them, found them, and the discipline boxing taught them, the way Brendan was able to communicate with them. You would often, over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years, they would change. And yeah, many of them didn't turn professional, but they taught discipline, they got jobs, they became sort of valued members of society. And he was able to reach the parts that others that couldn't reach. And I think that he deserves a lot of credit for that, as well as training 5 world champions in the course of his career.
Yeah. Did you get any clue as to how he did that?
Well, he was taught, like my grandfather was, by an Englishman in Dublin. And this Englishman had a sort of a system where they would start with footwork. It was all about footwork. And so they would go up and down these lines, you know, putting their feet in the right places over and over again, repetition, repetition. And then they would do the same with circles, going one way or the other. And this Englishman, David Stewart, I think instilled that into all the Fighting Eagles of Dublin. But Brendan took that and then modified it so that, as he always used to say about Naz and all his fighters, they can box orthodox, they can box southpaw. They can sort of be on the front foot, they can switch hit, they can dance, they can move. And to Brendan, it all came back to these lines and these circles that taught the basics of footwork, those sort of that fundamental of boxing to be hit, to hit rather and not be hit. And Brendan had, you know, what he called his system, and it came really from David Stewart, you know, back in sort of 1930s and 1940s and 1950s Dublin.
Mm. And the rift as depicted in the film, was it as sudden and dramatic as that, or was it kind of a bit more dragged out in real life?
Yeah, no, it was. I think there was always going to be something because Naz, for all his brilliance as a fighter, was had that sort of other side to him, and as he grew, it became more apparent and bigger, and Brendan couldn't control it. Where I think the film gets it a little bit wrong is Brendan would talk about money, and he was a sort of, you know, I guess a sort of a socialist with a very small s, but he sort of felt that, you know, people should be deserved to be paid what they should be paid, and he did stress that. But I think what he wanted most of all was respect from Naz, from what he'd done, respect from the wider world as well. And so I think that was partly at the heart of it, because Naz would often say, oh, my talent is God-given. You know, it's come from Allah and whatever. And Brendan was like, well, you know, if it wasn't for me and my system, you know, for all your talent, you wouldn't have probably reached the heights you've reached. So that was, I think, another thing that was at the heart of their rift.
Yeah, and did Brendan blame Naz for that exclusively, or perhaps his brother to a certain extent?
Yeah, I mean, I think he was definitely more his brother. But Brendan was always fearful that other people would take away his fighters, because it happened with him with Harold Graham, and a lot of the other fighters that he developed, he'd had them from a young age, and then he sort of saw promoters and other trainers, other managers. So he was always suspicious and fearful of that happening. And I think with Naz, it was... there was partly that, but it was partly Riath and a couple of other brothers, but he felt, were poisoning Naz against him. Now, I think that was perhaps was true, but I think it also perhaps deflected from that Naz was at 19, 20, 21, suddenly people were throwing loads of money at him. They were telling him he was great, and he was happy to sort of go along with the fact, I'm great, and perhaps downplay the other people that had helped him get to that stage in the first place.
Mm. And any attempts at reconciliation? Is it true Naz made some attempts, but Brendan rebuffed them?
That is true. I think I spoke to one of his sons, Dominic, at the weekend, and after that split in 98, Brendan was almost like, okay, I'm done. And Naz did try a couple of times. There was an incident, a fight in Sheffield where sort of Naz sort of tried, and he also tried to come to the funeral, but Bridget, one of his daughters, sort of told him, you know, known certain times, no, because Brendan wouldn't have wanted it. I think Brendan would do everything for you, and he was a lovely guy, and did so much for the community in Sheffield. But I think if you let him down enough times, he sort of once that would happen, that was it.
Yeah, and you know, as you say, he did believe it, like anyone should be beat to be fairly paid. But there is a story about Johnny Nelson, one of his boxers, and he kept him funded for over a year, but it had to be completely secret.
Yeah, exactly. So when Johnny wasn't able to fight, you know, and he had no money, Brendan sort of, you know, pulled him to a side and said, "Look, I'm going to give you £250 a week for, you know," and that happened. You end up paying that for 13 months. But there's one proviso: you cannot tell anyone. And if you do, I will want the money back. Now, what happened, Johnny, you know, when Johnny started fighting and winning, became a world champion, he offered to give this money back to Brendan. Brendan was was like, no, thank you. I don't need it. That's for you. And he still lived in the same modest house in Winkerbank, I know, after Naz became a world champion. And obviously Brendan had some decent money at this stage. The only thing I remember changing about Brendan is that he got some, new iron gates for his house. So he really, he really didn't change. While, a lot of the fighters understandably moved to bigger houses on the nicer sides of Sheffield, Brendan lived in this very, working class area for the rest of his life.
Sean Engel is chief sports writer for The Guardian. Sean, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.